I am so happy to be here and looking at our little sangha here. I see some familiar faces, which is nice, and I see a lot of new faces, which is beautiful. So hello and welcome to everybody. I'm just so delighted that this is happening at Spirit Rock, and we get to be here early on and forming our sangha. So I am going to lead us in a meditation about 30 minutes or so. And then I am going to do my best to share some dharma with you this evening. And I think at the end, hopefully we'll have some time for discussion. We'll probably just leave it to open discussion tonight and see where that takes us. And I'm curious, I think I can see just about everybody on the screen. Is there anybody who's here for the first time this evening? For those of you that I can't see. Oh, we do. We have a lot of first timers. Sweet. Oh, I love it. Oh, that's awesome. So many. Beautiful. Okay. How many folks are relatively new to meditation? Curious. Okay, everybody's a pro. Okay, yeah, cool. Okay, so we got a lot of pros. We got a few that are new. Okay, gotcha. Nice. Oh, okay, all right. Yeah, now people are coming out. Okay, sweet. So, I will give a bit of instruction in the beginning of our meditation, and we'll go from there. So, without further ado, just invite you to get comfortable. We are in our own spaces, and so you can be sitting down, sitting upright if that feels right for you. Some folks like to lie down, and that's okay. You can do lying down meditation if that's working for you. Sometimes when you lie down, there is a tendency to fall to sleep, so beware. You want to be more energized, probably better to sit up if you're able. So just finding a nice, comfortable position for yourself. Maybe starting with a few deep breaths, just inhaling fully, exhaling completely. You can allow your eyes to close if that feels good. You can also leave your eyes open. At a soft gaze, if that feels right. And so, just in this moment, we're just coming home to the present. We're just gathering ourselves from our lives, the lives that we walk around in. Just bring the attention and the awareness right here, this body. This place, this moment. Sometimes I envision all my little selves coming home from all the corners of my world, and just coming to sit down. And so noticing. Noticing the body. Noticing any energy that you're carrying with you, the energy of the day. You can also kind of check in with your heart mind, your citta, and just kind of see what is the tone, what is the timbre that you are holding today. So just noticing. Coming to settle. And so dropping your shoulders, releasing. With each inhale and then exhale, you can kind of release a little more fully, a little more deeply. And so allowing the head to float upward, pointing the crown of the head toward the sky. Just elongating. Embodying that sense of nobility as you sit on your seat. And at this time, I want to invite you to set an intention for yourself. Just to make a heart intention. And so just checking in. It's going to be an intention for this sitting period or for this, the rest of the day, the week, or just in your life in general. So what would be supportive for you? What is supportive for you at this time? What is nourishing? And I think it helps to say it to yourself. Actually voice that to yourself. And so taking an inventory, I'm going to listen to the body and listen with all of our feelers, our senses. What's present for you right now? What's alive? What are you feeling? What is here? It might be joints that are speaking to you. There might be places in the body you notice that you're still holding on to. Where are you holding on? What's happening in the solar plexus or in the belly? Maybe subtle, maybe strong. Just noticing. And also, what happens when we bring our attention, our awareness to these places? Body. Body is the first foundation of mindfulness in our tradition, because all that we need to do to touch into the present moment is touch into the body. The body is always available. And so opening to all of your senses, you can kind of expand outward. And also take an inventory of everything that is arising in your present moment experience. Any sounds that might be happening? Any sensations on the skin or sights in front of or behind the eyelids? All of your experience in this lifetime comes to you through the senses, through this body. So this is all a part of your present moment experience. Just opening. And when it feels right, coming to rest your attention on the sensations of breathing, the sensations of the breath. If the breath is comfortable and available to you, you can also choose any constant as your anchor. I'm going to focus on the sensations of breathing. So just noticing how the breath is for you today. What's it like to be a living, sitting, breathing being in this moment? Sometimes we get in our habit patterns around this, around coming to be with the breath. How is it really? How is it right now? What is the timbre? What are the qualities? The breath can be so powerful. It is such a powerful force. It moves through us. Doesn't require any effort on our part. What is this breath? It connects all living things. You might notice your heart rhythm moving the breath through the body. How is your breath today? Breath comes to us from mountaintops, clouds, ocean mist, and trees. Incredible, this breath. So as we are sitting, lying down with our awareness and our breathing or our anchors, the intention of being present, the mind will do just exactly what the mind does. And it may begin marching down its own agenda, traveling off to faraway places. And that's just fine. It's what the mind does. It's a beautiful, beautiful instrument creation, machine, thought-producing machine. So our job is just to be aware. Just notice when we notice anything like this, we just come back. We come back to the sensations of the body, the sensations of breathing, to our anchors. And we begin again. This moment is the only moment that is actually happening. So we will sit quietly for a time. So notice where is the attention? How is the mind? Just notice. No big whoop. We have been carried away somewhere. You can always make a soft whisper as to where you journeyed off to, where you spend your time. Let me just come back. Each time you come back, it's a cause for celebration. That is awareness. That is noticing. And so we begin again. No trouble. So we're coming to the last few minutes of our meditation together. And so I'd like to invite you with these last few minutes to see what it's like just to practice a little bit of mutual metta. I like to call it metta. Is our practice of loving kindness practice, where we just make an intention or a wish toward the self or others, rooted in kindness, rooted in love. So if it feels right, you can just kind of soften your heart space by directing the breath there, just breathing through the heart. And if it feels good for you, you can place a hand on your heart or your belly, whatever feels good. And so just appreciating yourself for coming to practice today, for engaging, whatever effort it took for you to navigate and arrive here. And if it feels right, you can share that appreciation with everyone else here in our Sangha tonight. Just by arriving here, we are supporting each other, supporting each other's practice, so we can share in that appreciation. It feels right. Just breathing through, sending out gratitude, appreciation, loving kindness. And you can also open to receiving. Invite a half smile to your body. See how that feels. Oh, I'm so happy to see everybody. As we started in the waiting room, we had some music playing, and Amiko had listed the artists there. These are native healing songs that were playing. Some of you may have missed it. Who came in later. But these are songs by Robert Adson, Johnny Mike, and Verdeo Primo. And they're in the Navajo and Sioux language. And I wanted to play them because I wanted to bring into our space this this notion or this idea of the warrior spirit. Warrior spirit and the warrior's heart. Because I think of us and our community, our rainbow family, our rainbow community is kind of warrior spirits, warrior hearts. In terms of walking in the world, walking in our authenticity requires us a certain amount of fierceness, a certain amount of that warrior spirit, that willingness to open to our authentic selves. And also, I think it's kind of a charge. I mean, if we look around at the work in the world that our alphabet, our rainbow community does in working toward full citizenship for everybody, inclusivity for everybody. You know, that's a beautiful, beautiful charge. And that is speaks to the heart in this community. Some of us have suffered great traumas just in that endeavor to walk in our truth and loss. And so, much healing, much transformation that requires this. So warrior's work. It's the same on this path. this path of the Dharma, this path of practice that we are walking, very much the same. So we're already pretty well versed in this community on the path of authenticity. This is the truth of what we are doing. We are looking deeply. We are uncovering the truth of what is here. And it's not always easy. Not always easy looking at being with, sitting with the truth. So I wanted to talk about something that has been up for me. It's been present for me, and I think possibly for many. Sometimes what we're touching into when we're doing this work, when we are sitting with this practice, we are actually touching into sorrow. A bit of sorrow. I wanted to acknowledge that. In this practice, we talk a lot about dukkha, right? The Pali word for suffering, dukkha. But do we really actually really acknowledge the very real and resounding, it's resounding, the sorrow that is present? There is a real deep sorrow underneath it all that is sitting there. It sits there. And I think it's there. It's apparent. It speaks to many of us on this planet. I don't know whether it's related to our love for the world, whether it's related to our longing for happiness, longing for connection. Hard to say, but it is there. If we look deeply, we might see that it's come along to us. Along generations from the past, the sorrow. And so how do we work with it? You know, what do we do with it? What do we do with this? It sits there in the body, sits there in the heart. There's a Zen master, a Vietnamese Zen master. His name is... Or actually, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead. Thich Nhat Hanh, our Zen master, the Zen master of our times, says that we are only truly alive when the mind is with the body. So turning toward, right, this practice that we do. We spend a lot of our time turning away from our suffering, I know that, and discomfort, I do. And certainly any difficulties arising in the body from past traumas. We don't want that, anything from that, anything but that. So we have difficulty being with sorrow, difficulty being with suffering, with the intensity of our pain, and moving through trauma. This is pervasive. It is pervasive. In this practice, and it is pervasive in our society. In this practice, the convention has been that we sit and meet our difficulties, right? That we look deeply with compassion and kindness, yeah, and that we tend to our challenges, we turn toward to find a clear path, we turn toward and we look. That's been the convention. So most of the time, under many circumstances, this is the good medicine. This is what works. We can see, we can look. But there's also an intense anxiety and discomfort that can come up for some of us. And it's brought on by trauma. Brought on by traumatic events, traumatic experience, And what's interesting is that most of us have brushed up against or touched trauma in some way in our lives, either personally or through someone close to us. Everybody. Deep trauma is pervasive in today's societal system. So I want to acknowledge that. Some of us have been so deeply impacted by difficult events that mindfulness is hard. Mindfulness is hard. And there's actually a place in practice, no matter who you are, there's a place in practice that you, when you come up to, you come up to this place, you've been gardening, you've been digging out the weeds, planting flowers, and these things that are what's left in there, so amplified, so loud, the things we've been turning away from. Eventually, you know, the body wants to tally up. And so we have to work through it. We have somehow to reconcile. This is pervasive. So being with or going to meet that pain or that suffering or that stuck energy can be triggering. And that's why we avoid it. We can be thrown right back into a very real physical, visceral sense of overwhelm. And it's challenging. So this kind of trauma stays in our bodies. It's kind of locked up, in a sense, in the nervous system. And it can continue to arise. It just continues. So anything but that, right? We don't want that experience. So we tend to stay closed. We tend to stay closed off from it. Difficult being with sorrow, with suffering, with the intensity of our pain. We want to move through trauma. We want to come out the other side. We want to be free. We want to be happy. Yet it's there. So how do we fully embrace the fullness of our experience? So now there's a another Zen master, Vietnamese Zen master. This is kind of heavy, so I just want to warn people. His name was Thich Quang Duc, and he self-immolated in the 60s. There's a famous photograph of him. I don't know if folks are familiar. There's a monk on fire in the middle of the street. And so he did this. He was, there was political, and there's also a Buddhist tradition, which the Dalai Lama says do not do this anymore. But there's a tradition of taking on the suffering of others and taking it on. You're taking it from them and putting it onto yourself. And he also did this to protect Buddhism, to protect access to religious practice, religious freedoms in his country. And so he went out there and he got into lotus position, and he covered himself in gasoline, and he set himself on fire. And it's said that he didn't cry out, that he sat chanting the sutras. And so when his body became charred and unable to support itself, he collapsed. And he reached out one arm and pushed himself back up and resumed chanting as he was in flames. So sitting in the fire, touching the heart of suffering, touching our sorrow. It can be like that. Sometimes our emotions are so strong, so powerful, the discomfort is overwhelming. It is like sitting in fire. So going deeply into the heart of suffering, it's difficult. It's painful. And this is where, along with being difficult and painful, this is where compassion is born. And so what we're doing is we're getting in touch with holding a sorrow that is bigger than our own, bigger than us. This is how we do it. And so when we do this, the compassion also grows that is bigger than our individual suffering. And it's a compassion for the sorrow of humanity, for the sorrow of the world. There's an intergenerational thread that comes to, it comes with a deep tenderness, the tenderness of our collective wounding. And so this wounding manifests in our lives from past generations, from past harms, because the karma from these harms is all around us. It's all around us. This is, our karma is constantly unfolding. You know, this moment conditions the next moment and so on. So these past conditions come to us from generations. It's all around us. We are eating it. We are consuming it. We are ingesting it. We are watching it on TV. We're scrolling through it. And these harms are this moment permeating the fabric of our lives together. This tapestry, this web of which we are all a part. And it is touching each of us in our lives and in our core and our beings. So when we are willing and when we are able, we can open to it. When we get down beneath everything through this practice, through looking deeply, we can see it, we can touch it, and we can finally feel it. We can feel it. It's powerful and it's deep. And so if we are willing to open to it, it's there. And there's nothing more to do at that point but to weep. And we acknowledge that. It's to weep with compassion for the world. This is the truth. So we can actually stop identifying with it. In actuality, it's much bigger than we are. Some of us may be working with addiction, any form of addiction. Some of us may be prone to anger or even violence. Each of us may be in touch with any manner of afflictions. But they have come to us through generations of harm, suffering, and sorrow. And so on a very deep level, these are not our own. These are not our own. Yes, we are working with them. We are transforming. We are the vessel. Right? Deep within, right here, while the fires of transformation are burning. So, not ours alone. And what we can do is we can drop the storylines. We drop the storylines and we open as much as you can to the sensations that are arising. If it's grief, can you hold it as the grief of the world and not identify with it so much? If it's sorrow, it's sorrow arising, the sorrow of the world, and not identify with it so much. Just be with the sensation. Drop the stories. We don't have to grab on to it as our own. So in touch with sorrow, in touch with compassion. Yes, I have a poem. It's called The Place Where We Are Right. It's by Yehuda Amichai. He says, from the place where we are right, flowers will never grow in the spring. The place where we are right is hard and trampled like a yard. But doubts and loves dig up the world like a mole, a plow. And a whisper will be heard in the place where the ruined house once stood. I love that poem. So, of course, in this life, we also experience moments of exquisite joy and happiness, times of happiness and joy. This life is full with wondrous experience. Thich Nhat Hanh says, the essence of our practice can be described as transforming suffering into happiness. So what's interesting is that happiness is a conditioned thing. And that means that it's often fleeting or impermanent. It's dependent on other things often. So here's a little bit more from Thich Nhat Hanh. I'll just read it to you. This is nice what he says. He says, we all want to be happy. And there are many books and teachers in the world that try to help people be happier. Yet we all continue to suffer. Therefore, we may think that we're doing it wrong. Somehow, we are failing at happiness. But that isn't true. Being able to enjoy happiness doesn't require that we have zero suffering. In fact, the art of happiness is also the art of suffering well. When we learn to acknowledge, embrace, and understand our suffering, we suffer much less. Not only that, but we're also able to go further and transform our suffering into understanding, compassion, and joy for ourselves and others. Yes. So he lays out five practices for nurturing happiness. Because we actually have to nurture our happiness. I'll share them with you. Mika, if you could share the five practices for nurturing happiness. We have five of them. Let's see if we can pull them up here. There you go. So the first one is letting go. He says there's a kind of joy that comes from letting go. And so we can do this with our lines of thinking and repetitive thoughts. We can do this by just coming back to the body, right? Just let them go. No matter what we're doing in our daily lives, we find ourselves in that place of anxiety, in that place of deep suffering. With mindfulness, we realize and we can just let go. We come back to the body. We come back to what we're doing. We must train ourselves. Don't follow the storylines. Be with the sensations. And sometimes strong sensations of anxiety or fear or sadness. But if we let go of the storyline and go to the sensations in the body, something happens. Something happens. So I encourage you to give it a try. We can also let go in many other ways in our life. It's a kind of renouncing. You know, many of the things that we believe will bring us happiness, in reality, just do not. And instead, they bind us to suffering and unhappiness in many ways. We know this. We can see this. This is the treadmill effect, the carrot dangling. And we can kind of entrap ourselves in this, these beliefs. So we learn to look deeply into our desires and attachments and to discern what leads to suffering and what is supportive and helpful. And so upon seeing clearly, it's often that we just naturally let go. And this brings freedom and greater happiness is likely to follow. And so the second practice to nurture happiness is inviting positive seeds. And so oftentimes when I find myself in the throes, some negative thought patterns, some anxieties, whatever, I let them go. And the next thing I do is I replace with something positive. So Thich Nhat Hanh says, we each have many kinds of seed lying deep in our consciousness. Those we water are the ones that sprout, come up in our awareness and manifest outwardly. So nurturing what is positive, we can spend day in and day out mired in our suffering. We roll over despair again and again, and guess what? It grows. It grows, so we must bend our attention to what is positive. We let go, then we replace that impulse that likely leads to more suffering with something positive, beneficial, supportive. And I like gratitude. Gratitude practice is good, especially if you can connect with a live person and express gratitude. It's a wonderful replacement to negative thinking. So the third is mindfulness-based joy. And he says, mindfulness helps us not only to get in touch with suffering so that we can embrace and transform it, but also to touch the wonders of life, including our own body. Then breathing in becomes a delight, and breathing out can be a delight. So with mindfulness, we can open to the conditions that are all around us and that are already supporting our happiness. We can open to what is actually here, and present in our lives. This is the place where we have choice. This is the place where we can engage aliveness. And we really can begin to discharge and leave our old patterns behind, our habits that keep us sort of entrenched and bound. So mindfulness is the energy that we want to engage. We want to develop it and grow it. And so that will lead us to the fourth, which is the fourth practice for nurturing happiness, which is concentration. So concentration is born from mindfulness. Concentration has the power to break through, to burn away the afflictions that make you suffer, and to allow joy and happiness to come in. So there are many things that will arise around us in our lives and in our world, in our relationships, you know, whatever it is, that are ready to take us away, to take us right back into whatever patterns. So mindfulness leads to deeper concentration. And concentration helps to stabilize us, in the here and now. So we don't get so caught up in that which has yet to happen, you know, that which in the past has already happened that we are stressing about things. We don't get caught up in all of these worries and concerns that might arise around us. We have more stability when we develop mindfulness. Concentration develops and we can become more stable. So we can acknowledge what's arising, and we can skillfully manage these concerns and return to what is real. And so the fifth of these practices is insight. So with mindfulness, we recognize the tension in our body, and we want very much to release it, but sometimes we can't. And so what we need is some insight. So with our mindfulness and concentration, we can look deeply into things and uncover what is needed, what is helpful, what is beneficial. A couple weeks ago, I was actually experiencing some sensations in my body. It was anxiety that I had noticed. And I was like, oh, what is this? What am I feeling? And I realized that I was having some aversion. I was actually going through some aversion to something. I was like, well, what is this aversion? Because I looked into it. And I noticed that I was having some aversion to a strong desire. It's a desire that I did not want to be having. So I didn't want to look at it. And I was having anxiety in my body. But when I opened to it and I looked at the desire, I could see underneath the desire to the deeper need. So maybe a not so wholesome habit or desire. But if I look underneath, maybe there is a deeper need that I could nurture. And so that's what we're doing. With insight, we can see what is needed. And we can see a more clear path. So in this way, we can nurture happiness for ourselves. But we got to tend to it. We got to tend to happiness. So looking into the heart of sorrow can lead to an overflowing compassion that is greater than ourselves. The freedom from our identifying with it and with kind attention, more happiness, aliveness, and joy. I'm going to read you one last thing here. This is actually from a book by Jack and Joseph, Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein. It's one of their books together, Seeking the Heart of Wisdom. I'm going to read you something from them. This is actually speaking about opening the heart and opening to joys and opening to sorrows. And they mention a young monk named Ryokan, and they include some of his poetry. So I will read their little excerpt, and I'll also include the poem. Opening the heart. For genuine compassion to arise, it is necessary to reverse the conditioned tendency of avoidance and to open-heartedly experience the full range of human condition. A beautiful expression of this possibility is found in the poetry of Ryokan, a wandering Zen monk who was born in the mid-18th century. His poetry reflects great willingness to be with what the Taoists call the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows. And from this open-heartedness to all experience flows a deep and boundless compassion. These are some of the poems of Ryokan. I'll read them to you. These are pretty deep. I love them. Once again, the children and I are fighting a battle using spring grasses. Now advancing, now retreating, each time with more refinement. Twilight. Everyone has returned home. The bright round moon helps me to endure the loneliness. The autumn nights have lengthened, and the cold has begun to penetrate my mattress. My 60th year is near. Yet there is no one to take pity on this weak old body. The rain has finally stopped. Now just a thin stream trickles from the roof. All night, the incessant cry of insects. Wide awake, unable to sleep, leaning on my pillow, I watch the pure, bright rays of sunrise. Oh, that my priest's robes were wide enough to gather up all the suffering people in this floating world. So, all the joys of all the sorrows, can we open to them? And so, just by coming together here, just by engaging this practice, we've already set in motion karmic events. We've already impacted, even just with each other to start, creating these conditions. And so, may any benefit that we have generated, any insight, any awareness, may it ripple out in all directions, touching all beings everywhere. May all beings know the great compassion. May all beings find joy, happiness, connection, and support in this life. May all beings walk the path to freedom.